if you're not convincing customers to buy or not giving them enough information to buy, like, what are we even doing here? Like, what is the point of all of this?
Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, trusted by more than 80,000 Shopify brands just like yours. Everything you need to scale your email marketing and ROI. Send emails, newsletters, and SMS. Build your email list with landing pages and pop-ups. One-click Shopify integration. Get 24/7 email and live chat support all with OmniSend. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. For anyone that's not tuned in before, welcome to the show. Absolute pleasure to have you tuning in. If you recognize that, it means you've tuned in before. So welcome back to the Winning with Shopify podcast. Great to have you guys tuning in. I've got a couple of quick announcements just before we dive into an awesome episode today. I'm super excited to introduce our guest and talk about what we're going to be talking about. Quite a unique guest as well, which I'll come on to in a sec. But just before that, just to flag quickly, if you are wanting to come to some live webinars, you've got some opportunities to ask me questions, ask some guests questions as well. My agency Spec is running a load. We're putting them out on the Winning with Shopify newsletters at the moment. So go and sign up to the newsletter or drop us an email and say, when's the next webinar? And we'll send something out to you. We've got some guests that have been on the podcast as well. So good opportunity to do a live Q&A with those guys. So I'm going to interview them for a bit and then we'll do a Q&A afterwards. We are doing one in a couple of weeks' time. Depends when this one goes out. It might be in a week's time when this one actually arrives on your devices. But we're talking to Caroline, who used to host the podcast, which is super exciting. And we're doing an episode on how to go from zero to your first $1 million on Shopify, which is very exciting. We've got a couple more in the diary later on as well. Somebody who's gone from zero to 10 million as well. And we've got a couple of really cool e-com directors. We've got a cool UX designer and a load of other people coming onto webinars as well. And as I say, they are live. So you can submit questions beforehand and also during the session. Enough from me. Let's dive into today's episode. I've got a very special guest who I'm going to introduce now. His name's Clayton. And he used to run his own store and now helps Shopify stores scale up and build their businesses as well. So without further ado, Clayton, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Cool. Well, I'm very excited to have you here. And as I said in my intro, you've got quite a unique perspective on this, the fact that you've run your own store and now you're helping other people grow and scale their stores. And so Clayton and I have agreed, just for everybody listening, we're going to do this, structure this a little bit like a story. We're going to start with Clayton's background, where he began, talk about some of the lessons he's learned there, and then flow into what he's doing today, trends he's seeing today, and what he's seeing stores do today as well. So Clayton, why don't you take us away first and give us a little bit of an overview to your background, what your store actually sold, where you started, how you started, and then we'll start to talk about some of the lessons you learned over that time as well.
Yeah, I think it all goes back one step further back. One moment changed my whole life. I was at high school and I actually went to get a can of Coke from the drink machine and I put the money in and seven cans fell out. The machine was broken and I sold those seven cans in 5 minutes and decided I was going to start my own drink business at high school. I made tens of thousands of dollars doing that at high school. And I think that's what started my brain on like having a business, things like that. Went into the real world, got a job. And then 1 year, I think 2008, I seen like a packet of football cards, trading cards in the shop, decided to buy some, started to sell them on and off for over the years and stuff. A lot of people don't know this, but I actually sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cardboard trading cards and stuff like that. 2014, I was like, I need a website. Things had started to, for the last few years, being really big on websites. I approached a few agencies. I was getting a lot of quotes for thousands of dollars sort of thing. And I was like, should I invest my money into an agency to build the website or should I learn to do it myself and invest the money into back into stock? I decided to do it myself. What I've learned now is if I hired those agencies, I would have probably made $200,000 or $300,000 extra. So it was definitely a big mistake to not pay the few thousand dollars to get the website done, but I wouldn't be where I am now. So basically it took 6 months to 2 years to really get a good idea of Shopify. Had a bit of a like crisis in my life, like didn't know what I wanted to do with my life in 2018 sort of thing. I was a bit burnt out from my old job. And then I was like, what do I like? I had a really good job, side business through Shopify. Everything was like sort of going down a good path for me. But I just wasn't happy. And I was trying to think, what do I like doing? And I looked back and I was like, I love building the website and learning how to do the website. And I was like, I wonder if I can be like an inspiration and encourage other people to do what I did and build websites for them and stuff like that. And then, yeah, so it was pretty hard for a year. So for the first year, it was very hard. Nearly lost everything, like nearly went bankrupt from, but I believed in myself and I knew that I could make my business work. And then one day Shopify just messaged me out of the blue. One of the bosses there had seen me post nearly 1,000 posts in the Shopify community forum, giving people feedback for free about their store. And so they reached out. They were looking for Shopify experts that gave a lot of value into the community. They reached out. It took 2 or 3 months of like this like interview process, me having to do stuff, prove that I know how to build websites, I know how to like help people make more money through the website, things like that. I got all the way to the end and they said, look, we would normally not take someone like you as a Shopify expert, but we're going to give you a chance. Just don't let us down. And to this day, I still haven't let them down. The reason why they said that is because I think they were more looking for an agency that had been around for a few years, done like hundreds of websites and stuff. And I didn't fully meet the criteria, but they could see that I really cared and I gave a lot of value and stuff. So they gave me a chance, which I'm very grateful for. And then basically, like not long after, I got the best clients I ever had. Some of my clients left video reviews. My business started to take off and it just hasn't stopped since then. So to think I was like a day away from like giving up and like I just backed myself and believed in myself and here I am now.
Wow. I mean, it's an amazing journey. And I'll be honest, I can relate to sort of three key parts of that. The one I want to flag, which is why I smiled really early on, is when you said about getting these 7 Coke cans from the drinks machine and then selling them. That's literally where I started. I used to buy sweets at the local shop on the way to school and then sell them at school. And then I sort of thought like, do you know what? This has got some legs. And it's back when eBay was really new. I'm a little bit older than I look. And eBay was just in its infancy compared to what it is today. And I started buying batteries from Duracell in Germany, shipping them into the UK and then selling them in individual packs on eBay. But I had to use my dad's credit card because I was nowhere near 18. I was like 13, 12, 13 at the time. And then my dad started asking for his cut because I was starting to make some decent money from it. So I did that for a few years and started my first business when I was 19 and just kept going from there really. But I can certainly relate to being a day from kind of completely giving up. And that's always the day where it defines you. It's like you have to hit what you're mentally for you is rock bottom sometimes before you can sort of pick yourself up. And suddenly there's no ego. You're super humble because you're like, I have nothing. Like I am actually at rock bottom here, which is sometimes takes all the distractions away that you need to be successful. You know, and we are Shopify experts. So I can vouch for going through those hoops and the amount of mornings you wake up and suddenly your profile's turned off because Shopify's launched a new feature and you've not added your logo in a square format or something. So you have to sort things like that out. But an amazing journey. And I mean, you've obviously had to run a few different stores then ahead of what you were doing today. So what is the main thing you're offering businesses today then? Is it building Shopify stores? Is it analyzing them? Is it doing conversion rate optimization? Like what's the main thing that you're focusing on?
Yeah, that's pretty cool what you said about school and this stuff as well. But we mainly focus on three things. So one is we do a free video audit. So if someone messages us, we'll do a free video going through their website, giving them tips and suggestions. And then the other two is we build websites from scratch and then we rebuild websites. I would say we probably rebuild more websites than we build them from scratch. So yeah, that's basically what we do now. I try to be inspirational, inspire people when I get on sales calls and things like that. That's what I try to be. Yeah, I think I'm going to start doing a little bit more of that, like trying to be inspirational and like inspiring people to go after their dreams and stuff. Because I definitely think pretty much anything's possible when you put your mind to it. You just got to put your mind to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a good book I can see on your shelf behind you, The Awaken the Giant Within. At one of my lowest points, I discovered that book. I read almost the entire thing in like 2 or 3 days and then had to go back and reread it going like, okay, there's actually some good stuff in here. And genuinely picked me up and it was a game-changing moment in my life was finding that. I don't agree with everything he says. But just the inspiration in him and the stories he tells of people that similar to what you've just described, where you kind of hit rock bottom and you set yourself a goal and just go for it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Let's talk about the store side of stuff. Yeah. Then. So you mentioned obviously rebuilding stores. I don't think there's a single person listening to this who's not sitting there going, my store could be better. And actually, we all probably get carried away. And I imagine you did on your with your old business. And I do from time to time where I just log into my own website or any of our websites we've got here and start fiddling around with stuff and making changes, not using any data or insights or doing things properly and just going, I like the look of this. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, which is part of the game. But I guess the big question to kind of open up on this then is, what are some of the common things you find when you come into, you know, helping a business? Perhaps you're the, you know, I imagine you're probably the first external person some of them have actually hired to do stuff on their sites as well. Like, a lot of people would have built their own sites and then you come in as the first, you know, first kind of new pair of hands to start touching code and that kind of thing. What are some of those initial things that people tend to always have, or some of the things you're always like, that's a big winner, that's a big winner, and we always need to do something over on this side?
Yeah, I always think there's five areas where most people need to improve on their website, especially the people that fall into like 10,000 to 100,000 a year, because those people most likely have never hired someone to build a website for them. So there's a few key areas where they fall down. The five are the homepage. People don't really understand how to structure the homepage. That's a really big one. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people go to the homepage, so it's a very important page to get right. The second one is a product page. They don't have all the information. They don't build trust with like reviews. They don't have benefits, things like that. That's another key thing. The third one is site navigation. So especially the more products you have, the more important site navigation comes into. So if you've got like 100,000, 10,000 products, like site navigation is like super important. Mm. The fourth one is the checkout. This is like what's super common for like people that build their website themselves. They forget to add the logo and the colors in the checkout. But yeah, that's like, yes, there's a disconnect. So I learned this like 5 years ago. Mm. Someone had like this really nice website, couldn't get any sales, and people were giving the guy advice, I'll change this. And I'm like, this guy's got a really good website. I went through the whole thing. And then when you get to the checkout, it was a completely different vibe and stuff. And then I told him to change that. And he got 5 sales straight away the next day. And it's like, whoa, that's like such a big disconnect sort of thing.
Nice.
And then the fifth one is like mobile friendly. Most websites get 50 to 90% of the traffic on mobile. So I think a lot of people don't optimize for mobile as much as they should.
Nice. I love that list.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I go through the list as well and give a couple of thoughts on them? Because we have, I mean, my agency does PPC and SEO, so we have all of this stuff going on in our heads. I think the homepage especially, I always find with the homepage, something we like to do is an A-B test on it and test actually how much do you go like product led? And I think, as you say, like some of the sites where the nav is super important, hundreds of thousands of products, especially big drop shipping sites, for example, or sites that have lots of suppliers, you know, tons of products, maybe small products, and you're going to buy 1,000 of them in one go.
Yeah.
Hypothetically speaking. But certainly on the homepage, we like to test the mix between like going really kind of find the right product for you, and it's about you as the customer, and here's the product, coupled with here's who we are and why you should care, which might be we're trying to change the world. And what are some of the things that you find, and I know it's going to be different for every single brand, but what are some of the common things you find on homepages that you're like, that's just a waste of space, or things that you're like, they're just missing this. Like, this is so fundamental to any business to put on their homepage.
Yeah, I always break the page down into three sections. So like when we build a website, we'll normally do the first type that I'm going to explain. And then if that doesn't work, we'll try other combinations, but it doesn't work on every single website. But we normally go hard on products first, because if you think about it, a lot of people are coming from social media, Googling their business name, they sort of know what the company is about if they're going to the homepage. So we'll go like, for example, banner that goes to all products or product. Then we'll go either collection list or featured collection, either way. So we'll go banner, collection list, featured collection, or we'll go banner, featured collection, and then collection list. So that's just making it like super easy for someone to go where they need to go to buy something. We found that works really well. And then the middle of the page, we build trust and a connection there. So we'll have like reviews, image with text, like a little bit of story linked to the about page, stuff like that. Maybe featured on, things like that. Sometimes we'll put featured on as the second block on the homepage if they're like being featured on some really, really big things, because like you think like really massive companies in their niche that like really builds a lot of trust straight away. And then the bottom, it's sort of like where everything else sort of goes down there. Like we might have 8 or 12 products, Instagram feed, some blogs, depends on what direction they want to go. But most people don't make it the whole way down the homepage anyway. So we really try to focus on the first four or five sections on the homepage, make sure they all are running well. Like, do you see the same sort of thing, like when you build websites, similar like that?
Yeah. I mean, we try to avoid doing the build. So we get someone like yourself in to actually do the constructing the pages themselves. Where we come in is because we're driving traffic in and most of it is new customer acquisition. You know, all the repeat orders, you've got loyalty programs, email, social, actually physically sending products out, putting stuff in. We leave clients to do all of that. We advise quite a lot on it, but it's like, that's your domain. Our domain is we're going to bring new customers in. So yeah, when we look at the homepage, you're absolutely spot on. I completely agree with the comment you made about most people will know who you are if they land on your homepage. Because as you said, they've done a brand search or they've clicked on a really generic advert, which you might be doing sort of top of funnel, small percentage of budget, but here's who we are, you know, some YouTube videos, some social videos, et cetera, or someone typing in like a problem on Google. But even then you probably want that to go to a blog post. You know, it's like, how do I fix this? Or my body's doing this right now. You'd rather go to a blog post for that. But certainly when they land on the homepage, the thing I always find is if it's quite a niche business, I find things like featured products and top products work really well. Because in a niche business, it's like we've only got 100 or 50 products here, or we've only got four products, but like 100 combinations of each, but it's still four products. So it might be sizing, coloring, et cetera, but it's just that we've only got four products and lots of variations. Well, then you feature the four base or the four most popular combos, you know, the most popular combo of each of those four products near the top. What we have found is some clients, and this is where I think the homepage isn't working for bigger sites, the 100,000 plus product type sites, is where you have like five featured products. And if this site sells everything from clothing to homeware to electronics, it's like, how have you decided to put like a small iPhone in there, plus a table lamp, plus a pair of trainers? You're like, it's just random. Unless you are using some sort of AI tech that has seen them on other sites, that's in the AI engine of, you know, something like Nosto or Dynamic Yield. And now that's coming through into the homepage, then fine. But generally speaking, on a bigger site, I think, as you say, those collections are going to work a lot better for you. You know, and actually saying like, are you looking to buy shoes today, electronics, this, and this, and then kind of let them do four clicks through to like finding their products. And four is not a magic number. It's, I love what you said about like test it and see what it does. Use that data.
Yeah, 100%. On bigger stores, we'll go collection list first before feature collection, but we'll do like bestsellers or new arrivals or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the big stores.
Or if something's mega popular, that's always a good one as well. Like there's, you know, limited stock left. There's always something to chuck on there because anyone who's landing on the homepage is, if you're not interested in it, there's loads of other stuff to click on. But yeah, something that's like, you know, if it says like we've sold 150 of these today and there's only 80 left, that's quite compelling to go, well, I need to make a decision now if I'm going to buy it or not. As a customer, it's quite clever.
Yeah, 100%. But I always think like, if you're not sure, you should test it anyway and see what works better. So that's what, like a lot of like my ideas or other people's ideas, they're all like, well, we've tested or their ideas, a broad sort of idea. You might have a niche where that would never work. Like you have to go hard on a different way or whatever. So yeah, just test what works for you, I think. That's what the main thing is.
Absolutely. And we'll talk, I think we're talking a minute about data and testing and kind of like, how do you analyze if it's working or not?
Yeah.
I always take the approach there with everything. And even the podcast and the way we're doing today's episode and the way people are receiving emails about this episode, for example, I always take the approach that when you're testing something or you're changing something, assume it's going to fail the first time.
Yeah.
Just get used to that. Get used to failure because it's not going to work and you have to keep changing it. But we'll talk about data in a minute.
Yeah.
One thing I want to come back to that you mentioned as well then. So second one on your list was product information pages.
Yeah.
Now, I laughed when you said this because the amount of time I spend trying to get a good quality score on Google Ads, or my team tried spending that, or my SEO team are trying to optimize, the amount of time we're just sitting there going like, all right, so someone's clicked on a Google shopping listing, Performance Max campaign, highest converting campaign type in the world, blanket statement, you know, like there are definitely bucks to that trend, but someone's clicked on a Performance Max campaign, which means they probably clicked on a Google shopping ad and they've landed direct onto that product. First thing they've ever heard about your business. So we then start looking at not just the product information, but even looking across the header of the site and going, is there a unique reason to buy from you here? And I always emphasize in the podcast, the you and USP, like, is there something unique? Because if you just say free delivery or click and collect, or we've got thousands of items, or we've got a load of reviews, it's great. Like, it's not bad stuff. And if you've not got those things, you kind of need to have some of those boxes ticked these days, but you need something that's different. And I love what you said about the, you mentioned about the homepage, but also on the product page, saying like this product was recently featured in this TV show or this celebrity's currently wearing it. Those are all massive. I mean, they can also be negatives, but generally speaking, they're going to be massive plus points. You know, there's the Netflix series Bridgerton, and one of our clients launched a Bridgerton range. They were actually nothing to do with the Netflix series. The Netflix series didn't wear any of their shoes. They just had very similar shoes. So they said like, this is our Bridgerton range off the popularity of that. And then did some blog posts about like, you know, where are Bridgerton shoes from? And they referenced the company in the blog post and just said, this is the company that make the shoes for them, but we've got a range that are similar and cheaper. Because the ones they're wearing in the show are like £1,000 a pair of shoes. Ours are like 200, which suddenly a £200 pair of shoes becomes quite a nice idea because you've already been Googling Bridgerton shoes. But I think the product information page as well, like the amount of times we've just done a very simple exercise and we have a bit of a framework, as I'm sure you've got similar things, like what does a customer need to know on a product page to make a purchase? And then how many sites do we see actually have even like half of those things? And it's just the basics, isn't it? Like dimensions, when's it going to be delivered by? What's the guarantee on this and warranty on this product? What happens if I've got a problem? Convince me that it's going to be durable. You know, maybe it's a pair of hiking shoes. Well, I'm going to be hiking in these things. Last thing I want to do is find myself on top of a mountain for 4 days and my shoes aren't working properly. They're broken or I'm getting blisters or something. That's a really bad outcome.
Yeah.
So actually one of the bits of information might be, we'll buy these socks with these shoes. You just got an upsell, you've increased your average order value. Boss answering a question that they might have, putting FAQs and stuff on there. I mean, do you find the same with the work you're doing then, in terms of like, you find people just, they're not adding the right information and they're relying on customers reaching out to like customer service or something to actually ask?
So most of our clients have followings on Instagram. So there's a bit more of a different vibe when people come through to the website.
That's cool.
So if people were like focusing on Google Ads, would have a different approach and stuff like that.
Yeah.
One of the things I find is that people don't want to add all the extra information sometimes. It's like this stuff makes a big difference. So even like one of our clients, they're making millions of dollars now, but back when they weren't, when they were at like 50,000 a year, which is cool that now they're a multi-million dollar company. It's like, hey, can we do this? Can I just do it? Like for free because they didn't want to do it. So I was like, stuff like that. Sometimes you just got to really get on board. Like, hey, this is going to change the whole website. We've got to do these little things. Like we've got to get all the size charts right. We've got to get all the specifications and stuff in there. Things like that. They make a big difference, I think, overall in the end.
Yeah. And using that as an example, I love what you said as well about trying to inspire people when people like yourself or we talk to merchants about improving stuff. Because I think some of this can seem really daunting. And you just reminded me of a particular client of ours who we said to them, like, your product information, A, it's duplicated on like 20 other brands also, well, retailers also selling this same product. Because you've all just used the manufacturer description. So SEO, we've got a problem here with duplicate content. Second thing is it's not enough information to make a purchase. The client turned around and very politely said, we just don't have the capacity to change that. And it's before ChatGPT was around or anything else to try and assist some of these things. I don't think you should write your product descriptions using ChatGPT, but it is useful for an idea. You say to it like, how else could I phrase this? And it'll give you some nice creative words, a bit like using a thesaurus, but it does it all for you. But they said that and we basically said then, okay, can we test it on one range? You know, what have you got loads of stock for? We've got really good search volumes in Google. We've got some decent rankings already, but we're not first page yet. We're not top three. We want to improve those. We did it for that range and it was such a game changer that although they've got 100,000 products on their site, or at least 50,000, probably near 100,000 now, although they've got that, we've taken the approach then of just taking certain ranges and going to town on those. And then the products we haven't gone to town on, those ones we use as like upsells and cross sells mostly. So we've got quite a nice balance then of like, there's not much information about this product, but we're telling you it goes well with the one that you have read lots of information about. And we're managing to get good sales across both sides now of lots of information and not so much information. And off the back of that, it makes more profit. And now they've said, right, we're going to hire an internal content writer who's just going to pump out product descriptions all day. And we're like, fantastic. That's what we need.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But then we increase their scope massively and said, right, we want for SEO and some FAQs across all of them. We want any reviews you see that mention like trainers. We want those on all of the trainers that you're selling. But I hear what you're saying. Like it sometimes is that capacity thing. And we've certainly picked up the baton in the past ourselves and gone, just give us a week or two. We'll get all of this rewritten for you. You're not paying us for it. It's not in scope, but we will get you a better result as part of doing this. So we'll put some extra time in and get it done. And I think it's so important. And as you say, like they're now a multi-million business, the one you were talking about, it does pay off. It does work. And I think if you're not convincing customers to buy or not giving them enough information to buy, like what are we even doing here? Like, what is the point of all of this? If same as you said about the checkout, you get there, it's not got the right information. It looks rubbish. Your logo's not even there. That's going to turn customers off so quickly. And that's the opposite of what we should be all aiming to do.
Yeah, 100%. I know how they feel. My old website had 10,000 products. So if someone turned around and said you had to change all the product descriptions, I'd probably be daunting sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes I work with people that have 50,000, 100,000 products as well. So we recently did one. It was nearly 100,000. It's like, hey, can you change all your product descriptions? But yeah, I think I'm a bit the same. Like if you change the best sellers or the ones selling the most first and work backwards or do a certain range and stuff, it's not as daunting sort of thing. But if you're going to do 100,000 products, like that's just like a mission and a half sort of thing.
And I think with all these things as well, is going back to what we're saying about testing, you can do it on a small range and see what it does. Because actually thinking about it logically, if you went off and did all 100,000 today and only like 100 of those actually saw a kind of significant improvement, well, if we had just done 50 or 100 in the first place and just keep changing things until something works, then when we do all of them, or as you say, work from the kind of best sellers and top sellers downwards, when we start to work through that list, at least we've got something to go on to say, like, these are the things that did improve and these are the things that didn't improve. So let's make them all sort of follow that, but we're still doing them in batches. You know, we had one thing with a client last week where we made a change to one country. They sell across, I think it's like 9 countries or something at the moment on Google Ads. We made a change on one country and it's really effective. So we rolled it out to all countries, didn't work in all the rest. We saw a drop in ROI. So we undid the change. ROI went back to where it was.
Yeah.
Okay, it works in one market, but not the others. And actually that's those learnings, like, yeah, although we had a small drop in ROI for a few days, yeah, at least we've got that output. You know, it's so important to make those learnings before embarking on the big mission.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about data. That was the other thing we said we're going to look at. So when you're testing something, what are some of the bits of, first of all, where do you get the data from? And what are you generally trying to monitor to know if what you've changed has had a positive or negative effect? You know, it can't just be revenue at the end of the checkout journey, can it?
Yeah, no, heaps of different things we test and stuff. I used to be really crazy about it before. So now I have like a staff member that checks all that sort of stuff. But some of the lengths of craziness I went to was like, have you heard of Lucky Orange that records videos of what people...
I've not. We've used a similar thing like Hotjar, for example, where you can watch a video of people actually using the website.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing, yeah. So I actually watched hundreds of hours of people scrolling through websites and stuff. And I think if you do have an agency like that builds websites, that's actually a pretty eye-opening thing to actually watch videos of like what people do on the website, because you can get data that says, oh, some 100 people clicked here or something. But until you actually see what they see on their phones and their desktops, that's like a really big eye-opener sort of thing. Like it really changed the way I looked at things. But yeah, we do like heaps of different tests and stuff. We'll test like, we'll look at the analytics. We use Hotjar sometimes and things like that. So yeah, basically, yeah, that's what we sort of do now. Yeah, I've got someone dedicated to doing stuff like that and doing checks and different browsers and things like that. It was just one of those things. It was like my brain was exploding with too much stuff and I was like, I got to get something. I go a bit crazy. I'm really maths focused in my brain. I've got a like analytical brain. So like when I do stuff like that, I go down rabbit holes of craziness. So I just needed to get that off my hands and get someone else to do it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to know our own limitations. You know, we've got a client who, and if you're listening, you know who you are. I won't mind me saying this, but we have a lot of discussions with this client that sometimes get quite heated. We always get really good outputs from it, but they'll say, why can't we just do this? And I used the phrase the other day that kind of silenced the room, which was, I'm working off data and facts here. You're just telling me your opinion.
Yeah.
So which one do you want to make the decisions based off? You know, it's your business, you decide. And they said, we want to try this. And we halved the ROI trying what they asked us to. To which they then responded and said, well, why did you let us do this in the first place? They said, I didn't let you do this. You made us do this and it didn't work. So like, can we go back to it working, please? It's like, all right, fair enough. Yeah. How do you guys want to? And it was, in a way, it's good to have that relationship sometimes with clients of just like, you got to speak your mind. I think going back to what you're saying right at the start about doing stuff yourself and not hiring an agency, I think one of the things I've always found with agencies is you've got to have a healthy relationship. You've got to ask the right questions. One of our clients, Matthew, you're probably listening. I know you listen to quite a lot of episodes, but one thing Matthew asked us, I think it was on the first catch up we had when we started working with him, is he said, we sort of said, have you got any more questions? He said, just one. What should I be asking you guys right now? And I think it's the same, if you take that same approach to even like using Hotjar and these video platforms, what questions should I be asking this platform? Like, what am I actually looking for? I think the first thing to do, and you say about your brain going mad with maths, I'm exactly the same, like numbers, analytics. I could spend hours just analyzing something. And then I remind myself, like, I'm looking for change here. Like, I need to make a change. I need to do something. And it's not just the numbers. We need to actually kind of drive that into something. I certainly find that, like, with Hotjar, I tend to just watch like 5 to 10 videos initially, no question in my head, nothing to decide, and then see where I think people, you know, what's the last thing people do before they leave? Are they trying to, they're expanding all the FAQs and then leaving? Well, that means there's an FAQ that's missing here. So let's add a final FAQ that says, like, ask us a question, you know, we're online right now, and it starts live chat, and then we can answer your question. And we log all those questions, start adding those as FAQs. That's a good output. But also, if you just, going back to what my client said, you know, if we just made that assumption and launched that, are we now just cluttering the page up with stuff that's not relevant? Like, using data and watching people use stuff is really important. We did find a Shopify site recently. We installed a very similar product to Hotjar, and realized people were trying to add to cart. And when they were adding to cart, they would add to cart and it took about 10 seconds before it appeared in the cart.
Yeah.
During those 10 seconds, a lot of them clicked on the cart, which then took you to the cart, which stopped the process of adding to cart.
Yeah.
So people were like clicking add to cart, going to cart, nothing there. Click back, add to cart, go to cart, nothing there. Then leaving the site. It was like, well, that's an easy fix, isn't it? Like, something's wrong here. There's a long JavaScript or there's an error or something happening, which you managed to find and fix very, very quickly. But even then the client responded initially and said, like, it's fine for me. It's like, yeah, but you're not the customer. Yeah. You're the merchant. So we need to find, what device are they on? Where are they based? What is happening on their device? That's what we need to try and find out. Fortunately, this tool told us browser, location, device type, et cetera, et cetera. So we managed to find the answer pretty quickly. But yeah, imagine if we didn't have that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I always say to my clients, like, when there's stuff like that, I'm like, let's do it your way for a week and my way for a week. And see where we're at and run a report at the end of it and stuff, and give all the actual data of like what's working and what's not working and stuff like that. Because I always think, like, when I speak to a client, it's like, I'm not always right. I'm probably right 80-90% of the time. But, you know, if you're never not sure, just test it and then see where we're at the end.
I love that. It's like, how do you know this is going to work? I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. But if we don't test it, then I still don't.
Yeah.
And if we do test it, then I know if it'll work for you or not. And I always take the approach, like, I know you say, like, 80-90%, you and I are supposed to know what we're doing most of the time, which we do. And we don't make recommendations unless it's worked for someone else or we see some data that's important. But I also think that if you take it completely to the other end of the scale and say we're only right 10-20% of the time, that's still awesome.
Yeah.
Because actually, if you go, we're going to run 10 tests, and if just one of them works,
yeah,
then we found something that works. Like, that's better than where we are today. So let's test it and find out. Obviously, the more a store starts to grow, the leaner and more bootstrapped it is as well. Like, the tighter budgets are and the tighter profit is. So yep. You've always got to balance it with, like, kind of what can we afford, what can't we afford, and that sort of thing.
A lot of stuff is a balancing act between everything. Speed, optimizing the site, like, all different stuff, yeah.
I was going to talk about speed, actually, and say, like, the final point on your list was mobile. And it pains me how often, and this is a slight rant, apologies everyone, but how often people show me stuff on a desktop and go, this works great, or look how amazing this looks. I look at the data and go, well, 75% of your audience are on mobile. So let's look at it on mobile. Oh, the images don't align properly, or like where you've got three columns that are supposed to go on top of each other on a mobile device, they don't, they're still there and you have to slide to the right, but there's no arrow, it doesn't tell you it's a left and right slidable. So people are seeing one of your three USPs or something and it's the worst one. Just says free delivery, which is all right. Is if nobody else offers free delivery, which Amazon do, so you're done there, I'm sorry. Then no one's seeing your USPs. But mobile, I mean, in one sense, it's mad, isn't it? We're sitting here in March, April 2024, talking about people who haven't got mobile right yet, given how long mobile's been around for. But it's not easy, is it? Especially page speed on mobile. It's not an easy thing to achieve. So what are some of the approaches you guys take to optimizing for mobile, getting something to work well on a mobile device?
Well, that just reminded me of a story from like 4 or 5 years ago. Someone's mobile, they were getting 95% traffic mobile and they cared more about what their site looked like on desktop than mobile.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a bit crazy. But yeah, we are going through different browsers and stuff, making sure things are aligned, there's arrows and stuff, all that sort of stuff. But with the speed, sometimes like, or not sometimes, it is a balancing act with speed as well. But some things slow down your website that you need to convert people into customers. So it's a bit of a balancing act trying to get it as fast as possible, but also still having the stuff that converts people into the customer sort of thing. So that's one thing. Initially, when Shopify first put the average speed score into the back end of your theme, initially I was upset, and a lot of people like me was upset about it.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the long run, so even though a large number of agencies were upset about it, I think the long run of Shopify, it's actually made things a lot better, because now we have to really focus on, like, the client's going to see how fast their website is and trying to make it fast and things like that. So I think overall it's good all around sort of thing. But yeah, we're trying to do heaps of little things to make it faster and stuff. But I think one thing, like, it's nearly impossible to get 100 out of 100 for the speed. So
yeah,
just think of it as a balancing act. Architects Themes actually made a really good post about it. They actually detailed all of like what matters for speed, why it scores, like how it is and stuff. And I thought that was a really good article that I send people a lot of the time. Really helps you understand how speed works.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to check that out, because we're always on the lookout for guides, because everything changes so quick.
Yeah.
So the one that we have been using, when I send it to people now, and it's, we've kind of written our own version of it, but the last two sections we sort of say, oh, they're irrelevant now because the Shopify backend's changed. So actually the first one, the code doesn't even exist anymore, and the second one, you're not using that app, so ignore it. Like most people are, but you're not. Which I think was the Google app, and even that's updated now. But we don't use the Google app for pretty much anything these days. We used to use it for shopping feeds into Google Ads or into Merchant Center, but we use something else now. But I think the speed score, when it first arrived, we had a mix of clients, some of them going like, why are you focusing on speed so much? It's amazing. And we're like, it's not. Like, Shopify's saying it is, but actually for real world users, it's slow. And other ones were then going, oh, speed's awful. And we say, yeah, but you're still like 15 percentage points higher than any of your competitors, which sometimes then led to the competitor conversation on SEO, which I love, because somebody will say like, oh, my competitor's this. And we'll say, no, it's not. Amazon is your competitor. eBay is your competitor, because they're the ones appearing next to you on Google. So we don't need to get as good a domain rating as them and as many products and pages and that sort of thing. But we do have to be way more confident in what we're doing and provide more information on our products than they do, provide USPs that they could never provide. Like, you know, you get a free consultation with somebody on, you know, on a video call once your product arrives. They could never do that, but we can. That's a good USP for a brand.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I definitely pulled my hair out, paid people to write articles, and then found that one from Architect Themes. One thing about Amazon and eBay, I always think like the competitive advantage you have over big companies like that is like building a connection with the people that follow you and things like that. I think since the pandemic, a lot of people want that connection and they want to feel something when they open their parcel or something like that. So little things like that make a really big difference as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I find Amazon packaging awful. I mean, it's all cardboard here in the UK, so it all goes in the recycling, which is good. But you open it and there's just nothing. There's just the product.
Yeah.
Like I think I ordered a frying pan recently, and it literally was just a frying pan. There wasn't even a tag or anything on it. And I was a bit kind of like, what the? They've literally just chucked a frying pan in here. And as someone who works in e-commerce, I see how lovely, you know, some boxes are, and it, you know, you sort of open it up and they've actually put like a perfume or something in it. So you're like, oh, it smells amazing. Like, this is really cool. You know, and it's got little flyers in there going, oh, these are coffee pods. And if you want a coffee machine, here's 20% off one of our coffee machines. I'm like, I don't need one, but that is a nice touch. You know, that makes me want to order from these guys again. And then you get something from Amazon. It's literally just a product in a box with some packaging around it. And you're like, there isn't even an invoice, receipt, literally nothing. Like, anyone could have sent this thing. It's literally just been picked off a warehouse shelf, put here. It's not even clean. Like, just all this kind of stuff is like, it's not a great experience. I think brands can definitely compete a lot more on that.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads me onto, I think, a really good place to come in and land on this. I think just as a last question, obviously you work with quite a lot of Shopify stores. It's 2024 now, AI's coming. You know, there's loads of, certainly here in Europe at the moment, there's loads of like consumer data changes. There's consent mode for Google Ads. Like there's lots going on. Some of it quite obvious and some of it less obvious. What are some of the things you're finding that are like real trends at the moment, big topics people are talking about, or stuff that you think actually is going to be a really big topic coming up?
Oh, yeah, obviously AI sort of thing. I never could have imagined how big that would have been like a year and a half ago. So, or even maybe a year ago, I don't know. It sort of just took over straight away overnight sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking about the future lately. I think the last couple of years, I've really thought about why do like some businesses last for 100 years or 50 years or 30 years? And I think those businesses, they're really, most of them are really good at adapting. So you have to adapt with what's coming sort of thing. So there's going to be a point where people aren't going to need as many Shopify experts, I'm sure of it, because the AI eventually is going to be just as good eventually one day. So I'm always looking for things that how to adapt and how to, I just try to do the best thing and try to look into the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I've also said over the years, completely counter to the question I just asked you, but to give everybody the kind of other side of this as well, is just as you said about AI, we didn't know AI was going to be as big today as it has been and this quick as well. Equally, how many buzzwords could we list right now? I mean, we won't just for time perspective, but how many buzzwords could we list that was like, this is the next big thing, that's the next big thing, that's the, and they've all died. Like completely died. There was a time where Facebook was scaling up like crazy. It was the only platform to advertise on, et cetera. And they've done two massive things to kill it over the last 10 years, like massive things. One was the, you have to now pay to advertise to your own followers. That was a massive kill. And then obviously the iOS updates, massive kill. Yeah. So I think part of this is, I love the adapting to stuff. I think keeping tuned into a podcast like this, you know, to plug my own thing. And partly why I run this is I get to talk to people like yourself all the time and find out what's going on, what's happening, which feeds into the day-to-day of what we as an agency do constantly. And so, yeah, my advice to everybody always is like, keep your finger on the pulse. Don't put all your eggs in any single basket. You know, AI might actually fall and tumble, and that wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it will, but it's a think, and I've been wrong many times before.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, it could tumble and stuff like that. It could take over everything. So, yeah, just keep your eye on it and you should be right, I think.
Yeah. I mean, for how many years have politicians been telling us like no one's going to have a job in 10 years time? And here we are 10 years later, every time, still all working and working quite hard.
I think humans always find a way. Mm. So no matter what comes in the future, we'll always find a way. Like you look at the tractor, like when the tractor come out, farmers are like, oh my God, it's going to take all our jobs and stuff. And like humans have been around so long, we just keep adapting and evolving. So I don't think it matters really what's going to happen. We'll evolve and adapt, or we'll just move to Mars if we can't work here.
Exactly. So, which we're not a million miles away from doing right now. Well, it might be a million miles in terms of space, but there we go. But yeah, look, Clayton, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great to have you on.
Yeah, no worries. I really appreciate your time as well. And yeah, I had fun. I love talking about business and Shopify. It's one of my favorite things to do. So thanks for having me. And
awesome. Well, look, final question, Clayton. If anyone's listening to this and going, Clayton, we need to chat. I need your help. I want to ask you a question. How can people reach out to you? What's the best way to get in touch?
So my business is Inspire Small Business. So if you just go to inspiresmallbusiness.com, just shoot me a message there. If you want a free audit of your website, I'll happily do that. We're also on Instagram, Inspire Small Business, and on YouTube. We've got a plan to focus a lot on making a lot more videos on YouTube this year. So that's Clayton Bates, Shopify Expert.
Nice.
You can find me there.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate your time. And yeah, make sure you check out some of those resources, guys. I think absolutely no reason not to get, you know, if it was absolutely awful, you've just wasted a bit of time asking for it, but I'm sure it won't be. So yeah, reach out to Clayton and make sure you get one of those free audits. Be careful what you wish for, Clayton. We had literally hundreds of people last time I offered that from my own business. So hopefully you get bombarded. I'm sure there's lots of good work in there. But thank you so much for your time and for everybody listening at home as well. Thanks for tuning in today. Again, it's an absolute pleasure to have you guys involved. Please do leave us a review, hit the subscribe button. And if you've not already, go and sign up to our newsletter. And we'll make sure you hear about all the webinars, the amazing stuff coming up over the next few months and years. Thanks for tuning in. Hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.